Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today I'm talking to, or will be talking to, Tom Chance, who is the London Green Party co-chair and candidate for Lewisham West and Penge. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hello there.
You can hear me okay?
I can, yes.
Jolly good. Okay. all right, I should make it clear that I have extended the invitation to the other main parties, as I am obliged to do, and maybe two or three of them will be coming on air next Friday. So you are the coach. You're a candidate for Lewisham.
I am, yes.
Lewisham West and Penge. Does that include Goldsmiths College? Is that in your borough?
It doesn't, no, but I imagine some of the students may live as far down as me.
Right, okay. So how do you live in Lewisham?
Yeah, well, I live in Crystal Palace, which is part of the constituency. It's a bit confusing because it covers a bit of Lewisham, a bit of Bromley.
Yeah. And can I ask you, I mean, what drew you into politics in the first place? Why are you sort of standing as a candidate?
Well, I was quite active as when I was younger, first at school and then as a student in politics, but not party politics. I started out as a Greenpeace activist blockading logging yards and things like that.
Oh, right.
And then spent some time in sort of free culture, like running arts projects and so on, and kind of got into the political side of that. And
What kind of arts projects were they?
I used to live in Reading, and I ran something called Remix Reading, which was when Creative Commons came along. So if your listeners are familiar with Creative Commons, which is this attempt to make copyright a bit more flexible, a bit more creative, and we did this project, which was based upon people trying to create works, kind of riffing off of other things that other people had created. So we did art exhibitions where you could sort of see the progression of work through different people who copied or borrowed or stolen or whatever from each other.
Right. Is that like Plunderphonics or...?
Sorry?
Is that what might be called Plunderphonics, where you kind of... It's a sort of genre of music where they sort of sample other music items and put them all together, sometimes without the permission of the original musician.
Sort of, yes. I mean, this is all done with permission.
Ah, is it?
The whole idea is for people to give explicit permission to each other to do it, and it's really what culture has done for thousands of years.
Right.
And trying to celebrate that, and, you know, in any town, in any kind of local art scene, people are doing it all the time anyway, but it was a way of kind of explicitly and saying, we want you to do take something that I've done and then do something interesting with it. But if you do something commercial with it, maybe I get payment for that.
Okay, I see. So in your case, the thing you're talking about, you get the permission of the person first.
Yes, it's all about explicitly giving permission to people. The idea of Creative Commons, there are all these licenses, and you can specify what people can and can't do to make it very clear.
Yeah.
Which is meant to sort of unleash a bit more creativity and freedom among artists.
Okay, right. So that's not so controversial, but it sounds like you were a sort of activist. Did you take direct action in things, or?
Yes, yeah. Locked myself to Esso garages and...
Oh, really? Okay.
All sorts of things like that. And then it was later on that a friend of mine was actually trying to get elected as a Green councillor, and I was doing a thing where we were talking to councillors about renewable energy, and we were supposed to be convincing them of this, and I just realised talking to all these people, they had no idea what I was on about, that it'd be a lot easier if I were talking to a Green councillor.
Yeah.
So I started to get interested in the Green Party, thinking, actually, you know, if I want those things that I believe in taken seriously, then I need to get Greens elected to take them forward. And once you get a Green in the room, I mean, in London, for instance, the whole cycling revolution, a large part of that has been campaigners on the outside and then also Green Party people in City Hall pushing that agenda. So
right.
Involved.
So you're standing as a candidate in Lewisham.
Yep.
And what are the chances, if you'll forgive the pun, of winning in this area?
Well, in my constituency, I don't expect to win because it's a fairly safe Labour seat. And I think, you know, being honest, that's the case for a lot of Green Party candidates because of our electoral system.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get enough of a vote to basically just shake the seat up a bit, sort of give the Labour candidate a bit of a run for his money and show that we can't take it for granted.
Right.
Plus, London will be, you know, this will be really be our attitude. But then particularly because also next year we've got the London Assembly elections, which is a proportional election.
So, oh, really?
Because yeah, okay. I'm hoping to maybe get 10% in my seat. If we get 10% across London, we return 2 members to the London Assembly. So we're kind of building towards an election where the electoral system does actually give us smaller parties a chance.
Right. So presumably you would be in favour of proportional representation in general?
Yes, very much so.
Absolutely right. Okay, and where would you come in the pecking order then in Lewisham? I mean, where is it? Labour is a stronghold, and then where do you come in the?
Well, it depends on the election, and it sort of changes over time. But last year we had the local elections and the European elections, and the Green Party came second in both of those.
Oh, right, okay.
We're currently the only other party in Lewisham to have a councillor.
Yeah.
And in Bromley as well, the Bromley part of my constituency, we came sort of second or third, depending on how you interpret the numbers.
And does that give you any influence then, if eventually? I mean, or is it basically if you're second, you're just out of it?
It does give us some influence. We have more influence in Lewisham because we have a councillor. So we got the council to adopt the living wage. We got them to spread 20-mile-an-hour speed limits across all the residential roads.
Is that just by raising the issue, or by actually, do you actually have any clout as such? You know, you just make things more visible.
Well, with only one councillor out of whatever it is, so it's 50-odd, you know, you can't outvote them, obviously, so you don't have
right.
in that sense. But we have worked with, on the cycling example, for example, the 20-mile-an-hour zones, we've worked with Lewisham cyclists and various other people who, you know, did a petition, kind of raised the issue, bring it into the council chamber. For years and years and years, we had a councillor called Darren Johnson who was pushing away at this, trying to get the council to accept it. And basically, if he weren't there, then nobody would be bringing it in, so it would never happen.
Right.
Ultimately, we don't have the clout to force these things through unless we have the balance of power in a sort of hung council or parliament or something. But we can raise issues, and we can often, we're quite effective in getting things through in spite of that.
Right, right. So are there any specific sort of arts issues in Lewisham that you might sort of, I mean, because Resonance, of course, has been going for over 10 years, and it's described as London's first radio arts station. So our sort of emphasis is on the visual arts and music. Is there anything in your area that which touches on this?
Well, one of the things that we're saying in our manifesto is we want to reverse the £500 million of cuts that have been made to the arts, libraries and cultural services generally across the UK.
Right.
In my constituency, there's certainly been library closures, which have been quite damaging.
Yeah.
I'm not aware, though. I'm sure somebody might ring in and tell me one I should be aware of any art centres that are closed. But we do want to properly give proper public support to these places that enable the arts to take place, because we do have some fantastic... We have like the Horniman Museum in Forest Hill. We have some really great facilities around the borough, but they can't always just survive entirely off of private donations or income. So we want to support those.
Right.
Another thing would also be that a lot of people who are artists or musicians will be trying to supplement the income they get from their work with some sort of extra jobs.
Yeah.
And a lot of those in London are very, very poorly paid. We want to bring the minimum wage in London up to a living wage so that people earn enough to live off, which would give artists a bit more money in their pocket to be able to dedicate a bit more time to do their work.
Right, right. Okay. Have you visited any exhibitions recently?
You know, I haven't, because I'm so busy with this campaign.
Sure.
I think the last one I visited, actually, was my brother runs a gallery. He's an artist. He runs a gallery in Hoxton.
Oh, right. Okay. What's it called?
It's called Mercer Chance. Yeah, give it a plug. It's on Hoxton Road. It's very, very good. It's meant to be a sort of open studio/gallery. So, you know, he and other people actually work in there as well as exhibiting artists' work.
Right. Okay. So you must have gone to an opening there.
I've been to an opening there. Yeah. My dad, loads of people in my family are artists. My dad's an artist and an art teacher, so I've been to an opening of his exhibition.
Oh, okay. What kind of artist is he?
He does mixed media, mostly sort of ink, paint. He did a whole series that were inspired by Shackleton and South Pole.
Oh, right.
Which is quite interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so can you think of any exhibitions you might have been to in the last year? It's not essential.
I can't think of it. No, I mean, my mind's gone blank. And I used to go much more, but this is the trouble with politics, is it just, you know, politics plus a full...
Yeah.
It takes your life away.
Yeah, okay.
I suppose I went to the Horniman Museum recently, actually, and I saw an exhibition about Romanian... migrants, which was very interesting. It was just photographs, basically, of people and then a bit about them.
Oh, okay. So it's like sort of politically motivated art.
Yeah, I think
then.
It's basically trying to say, you know, don't yeah. be racist about migrants. But no, it's very well done.
Right. Okay. I associate the Horniman Museum with tea for some reason. Is that right? Or
with tea?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is it nothing to do with tea?
I don't know. I suppose Mr. Horniman, the person who bequeathed the museum, may have been in tea as a business, but I've not noticed anything about tea there.
No.
Most famous for a massive stuffed walrus, actually.
Right. Okay.
Maybe a stuff with tea.
All right. Do you have a view on exhibition charges?
Well, we would want to continue with completely free exhibitions at major national museums and galleries, but
yeah.
whether private galleries want to charge them, I've got no view on that.
Right, okay. I must say, looking through most of the manifestos, I've looked through the sort of five, basic Labour, Conservative, Liberal, UKIP. UKIP basically only seemed to mention what they call British culture. I'm hoping to get one of them on next week to describe what they mean by British culture. But the other art doesn't seem to be much of a priority for most of the parties. It's kind of you have to really look for it.
Yes.
Okay.
I think one thing is that we don't recognise enough the value of the arts to our economy. I mean, it's probably the second fastest growing part of the economy in London.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is I think we sometimes also overemphasise the importance of its economic dimension as opposed to its cultural or spiritual or kind of wider significance. And for us, you know, the Green Party doesn't want our society to necessarily be so materialistic. We think that we are consuming too many of the Earth's resources. We are having huge damage to our planet with an economy that is consuming more and more and more. And actually seeing our economy revolve more around activities like the arts, people having more time for the arts, people having more time to visit exhibitions or to start sketching something they see there,
yeah.
It's very important because that's really where the quality of life comes from. And we're much more about quality of life than about economic growth and so on. So while sometimes it doesn't necessarily come across in a kind of five-year manifesto where we're also trying to deal with tax avoidance and low pay and housing costs and everything else,
yeah.
For me, the arts are quite fundamental to the way that we see a good society operating.
Right, right. But then it's a shame in a way that they don't figure more prominently in the manifestos. I mean, it's UKIP don't mention it at all, apart from this British culture. And in fact, the other parties also don't seem to put much emphasis on it. I would say most policies seem to read, a little bit like what you were saying, that most policies read like sort of accountants' end-of-year reports in a way. And when you see, night after night on TV, you get a sort of a group of people in a row, and it seems like an end-of-year report with the emphasis on balancing books and tweaking figures. Very little, in fact, on sort of with vision or imagination. In fact, I don't think I've seen anything that resembles an original idea from any party. Do you think there's a mistrust or suspicion of anything that might sound too interesting, or is it just that nobody in politics has ideas as such?
Well, I wouldn't accept that our manifesto is entirely devoid of any interesting or innovative ideas. I mean, there's an article by Terry Eagleton in The Guardian today where he says, look at the writing. I mean, it's very, it's kind of very wittily written article.
Yeah.
And he describes how, as you say, some of them read like an accountant's end-of-year book. But then he says of the Green Party's one that he actually finds that very refreshing. He describes it as being the most beautifully written, the most interesting manifesto, the one with the most vision and the kind of clear clarity of thought in it. So, I personally don't think that it's written anything like the way that the other manifestos. And what we've really tried to set out and describe is a totally different way of running our society. You know, we want a very radical change. And by radical, we mean getting to the root of the problems that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we've just recently had, in the last few months, we've had all kinds of controversy where people have come across some of our policies that are perhaps unfamiliar or a bit, out of the mainstream. And then people are trying to get their heads around them. And you get this kind of storm of controversy on Twitter until it all calms down and people start to realize what our policy actually is.
Right.
There was the stuff about claiming we were going to ban the Grand National, which is not true.
Oh, yeah.
But it was basically that we actually released a manifesto for animals. And we're a party that thinks that our sphere of concern should be about people alive today and future generations and other species.
Right.
And so we had things to do with cruel treatment of animals in agriculture and all these different things. And then one of the things was about horse racing, where still a surprising number of horses die or are killed because they're treated very, very badly.
Yeah.
They're kept in very inhumane conditions. Like you can imagine the racehorse living in a life of luxury, but actually they're basically kept in pens and then having to walk around in circles. They're not able to exhibit the kind of normal social skills that a horse would exhibit. So we released this manifesto of animals saying that we wanted to view the welfare provision for horse racing, for example.
Yeah. So then, is that a manifesto for animals then?
Well, it's included in our general manifesto as well.
Is it?
We sometimes release specific ones. We kind of did a young people's manifesto, which drew out some particular themes for young people. We've done an ethnic minorities manifesto on the same basis, and we did one on animals, as we often do, to say to the huge number of people in this country who are supporters of the RSPCA or members of different sorts of animal organisations. You know that this is what we're trying to say to you. This is what we were trying to do to improve the lot of other species.
Great. Okay. And is that's included in the manifesto itself? So anyone looking at the manifesto would find this information?
They will. It's in, I can't remember exactly the page numbers, but it's in the first or second section. There's a whole discussion about the earth and our place in it.
Right.
And includes lots of pledges to do with animal rights, animal welfare.
Right. Okay. I mean, just as an aside, I would say that on the I'm a cyclist myself, so I was quite interested to hear your opinion on. You say you introduced the idea of the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a cyclist, but I'm also a motorist. I mean, I do drive. I have a car, which I rarely use, but it seems to me there's very little. I don't know what you'd call it. Tuition or advice given to cyclists because they become road users, don't they? The minute you take on a bike, you become a road user.
Yep.
Whereas anyone else on the road obviously has to pass some sort of proficiency test or be au fait with the highway code and so on. Whereas cyclists don't have to do that at all. Almost anybody can just get on a bike and venture forth onto the roads. Would it not be a good idea for cyclists to perhaps have some knowledge of the use of the road?
Well, I mean, there's long been debates about things like should you have to have a cycling licence in the same way as a driving licence?
Yeah.
And then people say, well, what about a walking licence in the road? And where do you draw the line?
Right. Cyclists do mingle with traffic, don't they, with lorries so on.
So our approach to cycling policy is based on countries where they have a mass cycling culture and far fewer collisions, far fewer injuries, deaths, and so on, which are places like the Netherlands and Denmark. And what they tend to do there is on quieter roads, like residential streets, you have slow speed limits, so the equivalent of a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, and you try to stop rat running. So you make it so that those roads are only really used by people who need to get in and out from their house or to drop a delivery off or what have you. And then on the main roads, you give cyclists separate space. So it's this move that we've seen in cycling policy in London, thanks to cycling campaigners and partly us as well, towards having segregated cycle lanes. So you don't mingle with the traffic.
Right.
I've cycled all my life, and I'm happy enough going around the Elephant and Castle roundabout or something like that. But most people aren't and shouldn't be. And as you say, you know, they won't necessarily know about the rules of the road. And to be mingling in among buses and HGVs is just safe for them and for the HGV drivers and the bus drivers. So we want to put very significant amounts of money into re-engineering our road network in London and the rest of the country to enable that. And so we've got a pledge to increase cycle spending to the equivalent of about £30 a head, which is roughly what it is in countries like the Netherlands, Denmark, Germany, and so on, up from where it is at the moment, where it's just £1 or £2 a head. And that would enable us to make that transformation in the infrastructure. So that'd be good for you when you're cycling and good for you when you're driving.
Right, right. Okay. I suppose, are you aware of the recent occupations that have been taking place in colleges?
Yes, yep.
Notably at the University of the Arts, which led to an injunction being taken out against 15 students. Do you agree with the injunction?
No. I mean, it won't surprise you to learn, particularly having said at the beginning of this interview that I used to go and blockade petrol stations and so on, that a lot of Greens are involved in those. There'll be a lot of young Green Party members, possibly even parliamentary candidates, who are involved in those occupations.
Right.
And we think that it's important for them to have the right to protest, particularly given what's happening to higher education at the moment, the cuts to funding, the increase in fees, the closure of important courses. You know, the arts and humanities are really being hit by this a double whammy of the kind of move towards an instrumentalist view of education and the cuts in funding.
Yeah.
We think that there has been a really dangerous drift towards criminalising people, basically, just for trying to express their views. So
right.
you have huge police presences on campus protests, people being having injunctions taken about them. We think it's really a very dangerous way to go. And what it's saying to these young people who are just trying to find a way desperately to be able to express their views, it's saying to them, we don't want to hear your views, we're going to criminalise you for trying to do that, you shouldn't take an active part in society. So no, we think it's very dangerous.
Right. So presumably you're not in favour of tuition fees at all?
We, in our manifesto, show how we would fund scrapping them completely and going back to no fees, which is something that Germany recently has done, for example. They used to have fees and they've gotten rid of them again.
Right, OK. All right. So how would you support the students then in their strategy of protest?
I don't know every single last thing that they're doing, so I wouldn't give a blanket endorsement because some of them might be doing something I disapprove of. But the general approach of protesting, making your voice heard, you know, occupying places in order to try and force that onto the agenda, yeah, it's very supportive of their right to do it.
Right. Okay. I think that's probably it for today, Tom. Thank you very much for coming on the programme and taking part in Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. I don't know if I'm allowed to... I'm probably not allowed to wish you luck because that would show bias. So anyway...
I'll just say to anybody listening, whoever you support or whatever you believe in, just vote for that.
Right.
What you believe in, whether it's me or any other party.
Yeah. How many candidates will be successful for the Green Party?
Well, we hope to definitely re-elect Caroline Lucas.
Yeah.
We've got some quite strong campaigns in Bristol West and Norwich South, where we have every chance of winning those.
Right.
And then across the rest of the country, I'm hoping that we'll get a whole string of second places, but it really depends what happens in the next couple of weeks. You know, the number of people who support us actually come out and vote for us and have the courage to do that rather than feeling that they ought to, you know, just vote for the least of the worst options or something like that, then we may get more than that, but we'll see. And as I said, this is for us as about building our party towards elections where we have fairer voting systems.
And this would presumably give you some clout by joining the Labour, but not joining, but would you form a coalition with the Labour Party?
We wouldn't form a formal coalition with them because there'd be too many things they'd want to do that we just couldn't support, like renewing the Trident nuclear weapons or giving further cuts to unprotected areas, including the arts.
Yeah.
But we would have an arrangement called Competence and Supply, which we used to have with Ken Livingstone with him when he was mayor, which is basically that we'll keep them in government.
Yeah.
We will pass their budget subject to negotiation where we'd want to get more money into things like the arts, climate change, cycling, and so on.
Yeah.
And then we'll vote issue by issue. So if they do something we agree with, we'll support them.
Yeah.
If they don't, they can try and persuade us, but we may end up voting against them.
And right.
That's the way a parliamentary democracy should work, is that the parliament should be a place for debate and negotiation, not just sort of pushing things through off of backroom deals.
But what if it gets to the point where it is a sort of stalemate, if the SNP and the Labour aren't, you know, only equal the Conservatives, and maybe you had three members, could they swing it in that way?
They could, yes. And then, you know, our voices become very influential.
Right. But not a formal coalition?
No.
Never?
We wouldn't say never, but just based on the current Labour Party's manifesto, we certainly wouldn't go into a coalition with them on that basis.
Okay. All right. All right. Tom Chance, thank you very much for joining the programme.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. Bye. 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 Well, that was Tom Chance, the Green Party candidate for Lewisham West and Penge. And to finish, I should say that in this broadcast, I hope that as intended, I've given due weight to the various political parties. Conservatives, Labour, Liberal Democrats, UKIP, etc., and appropriate weight to the Green and not the BNP parties, and that Resonance FM as a community station is happy to address any perceived imbalance. Please contact info@resonancefm.com if you have any comments about the matters raised in this programme or the way they have been raised. Then anything you have planned in the way of a follow-up, in brackets, includes the BNP, exclamation mark. So appropriate way to the group. Anyway, I have approached the other parties, and some of them are welcome to take part next Friday.
Some inspector, police inspector, saying, if Frank Ross even farts, I want to hear about it. His usual story, he wants to sort out the people who sent him down and various other villains, Faishish, he called.
This evening at 8:30 outside the foundry, we're having a meeting to prepare for the performance at the horse hospital. It's on Friday. We're setting up at 7 p.m. We call the Jericho Orchestra. Suppose it goes without saying, I'll take you along to the performance at the horse hospital. Walking through the main station concourse to the S escalator, it'll take you to Waterloo East. Surprise, train route has encouraged my slackerdom, peeling paint underneath metallic steps leading to the other platform. Peeling paint. The appearance of perverted flaked mushrooms. Solid bolts amongst the peelings. Smatterings of dirt. Rusted nails poking through. Intricate decimated cobwebs. And that done Mark Hill. Long time to wait. Next train to Victoria, or a change to the Victoria, then Piccadilly line. Not until 6:19. At least Victoria is the only stop. Black bags, very heavy. Platform slowly filling up. More and more people. I'll be really popular with my amp. Truly horrible journey here. I'll be too exhausted by the time I arrive at the horse hospital. I might need some horse medication. The announcer is telling everyone how fucked up the whole system is. He's asking them to change at various stations if they want to get to Sevenoaks. Thankfully, no such problems on the journey to Victoria. Seated here, swearing under my breath, sighing deeply. You certainly won't come back via this route. It's corny. Well, taking deep breaths, letting them out slowly. Maybe you think I'm making a lot of fuss about nothing. Perhaps ironically, I'm here on Times, 7 p.m. The Jericho Orchestral members are setting up. It's the interval. I'm halfway through my second bottle of beer. It's worked out fairly well. We obeyed Peter's instructions of looking at the films more thoroughly and reacting to them and dropping out a lot. I feel like a third beer. What have I got to lose? London Bridge train back to Catford at 11:59. Looks like I'll bring things to a close here. Rumors surround you.
cackles with the cuckoo baby blue.
People, they Sie hören die Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called wavelength.